So, thank you for coming this early in the morning and for being here when there's such a interesting title as Enterprise Drupal on the other room. Thank you. I think I can skip this part. That's been done already. So I'm Christoph van Tomme. I'm a Belgian. I'm from Pronovix. We've got an office in Szeged. Yeah, blah, blah. but I already did that yesterday. So what is the session about? I think all of you by now have woken up in this world where everybody's like, mobile, oh my God. Like, how can we, like, my site has to work on mobile, and then people do all kinds of crazy stuff. What I want to talk about is, like, how do you deal with that? How do you deal even with a world beyond mobile? Because I've got some news for you, mobile is not the end. And that's what this session is about. How do you do that? So back in the days when I started making websites, which is not that long ago, 2006, 2007, life was easy. The screen resolutions were going up. And you had to, like, choose a resolution that you were designing for, more or less, and then life was easy. And you looked at your users, were they very corporate, then probably they were on smaller screens, were they more advanced, more techy, they were probably on bigger screens. Very easy. But then mobile happened, and now suddenly you had the same users, had, like, gigantic screens and really tiny itsy-bitsy screens. And I was just, that just basically blew up everything. So then some people started making, like, two websites, like one for mobile and one for desktop. And they're like, yeah, but then the iPad came. And then lots and lots of devices came, and it just became a mess. And then some smart people that said, like, well, let's make responsive design. Design that can handle all these different resolutions. So that we don't have to worry about size anymore. If it's a smaller screen, you just smash it together and put it in a longer column. And basically, I don't know if everybody knows what responsive design, but it's very simple. It's three things. It's a fluid grid, meaning that you've got a grid that's resizing. So depending on the screen size, it resizes. It uses media queries to define breakpoints at certain resolutions where you switch between different column systems, so like two columns instead of three if it's smaller, and one column if it's even smaller. And it's resizable media, so pictures that change size, videos that change size, basically everything is just changing size. Even your text should be defined dynamically. So that solves all the problems, right? No, it doesn't. Because what about these? You can't scroll on this. On Google Glass, you can't scroll. It's kind of like a PowerPoint. It's like one screen after the other. I don't think, I haven't had one, so I don't know. But even if you could, like, I don't know. It's going to be a mess. And what about this? Pebble, like, you know, it's a tiny screen. So this whole promise of responsive design breaks. There's a breakpoint for the breakpoints of responsive design. It doesn't work everywhere. And the thing is, this is not a new thing. This has been there forever. We just didn't realize it. The only reason why we didn't realize it was because so far we were only focusing on websites, and now everybody wants us to do everything. Because before, we had things like this. Like displays in trams and stuff, and things like this. Like, that exists for ages. So this is an old problem. The only thing that's different now is that we've grown into a world where people look at us and say, you guys do digital stuff, just handle all these channels. And the good news is that Drupal can do that. If we broaden our viewpoint, we can actually do that. So besides responsive design, what do you need? How do you deal with this other stuff? How do you deal with other viewpoints, viewports? You can deal with that with adaptive content. It's the idea that you can create once and publish it everywhere, however you want to, like wherever you want to publish it, it all comes from the same source. And that's old news. That's old news because technical writers have been doing this for ages. I'll come back to that in a moment. But basically the idea is that with adaptive content, what can you do? You can define reusable chunks of information, like chunks, not blobs, chunks. You can structure your content so that the information, it's not like, it doesn't depend on your HTML markup, what is what. So if you have a title, it should be in a separate field, right? That's structured content. It should be presentation independent, meaning that if you want to show it on a mobile device and on a Wildcat's LED display, then you know you can't put HTML in it, or you can't be marking up stuff. And you need to add meaningful metadata, and then hopefully you have a usable CMS interface. And I think Drupal is doing a lot of work to get better and better and better at that part. So. Now, let's talk a little bit about XML. Let's talk a little bit about Dita. Because a few years ago, I started looking at the world of the technical writers, because we are an engineering company, and we like building stuff. We like making architecture and constructing complex systems. Like the design, that's nice, but like our main thing is really like thinking through and building systems for that. So and when I looked at this, the world of the technical writers, they had this really interesting language for structuring their content called DITA, Darwin Information Type Architecture. And they started more or less around the time when Drupal started. It was originally an IBM project. That got contributed to the community, became an open standard, and they added some open source software for it, not too much. And then basically a whole ecosystem of vendors appeared with very expensive systems that could be used to make XML human-friendly, because XML, like just pure XML for technical writers, there's some that you know are from both worlds. But most often, that intersection is not that big. So now, what did they do with XML? They did a few really interesting things. First of all, they were using topic-oriented content. So instead of like, if you know a book doc, do you know the format? So doc book. So doc book is not topic-oriented. Doc book is like a giant document. It's kind of like a Word document where you put everything in one document and you can put structure, like it's structured, but it's all in one document. So what Dita did was that they made individual pieces of content, individual chunks of content that they could then reassemble into their documents, right? They use maps, and maps, those are the elements that they use to aggregate these individual pieces of content into their documents, into their deliverables. So and the cool thing about maps is that you can use the same piece of content, the same topic, in I don't know how many maps. You can keep reusing it. And that's, and because of that, you gain a lot of benefits. Because it becomes like if you translate a chunk of content once, it's translated everywhere. So you save a lot of money on that. That's why big companies that need technical documentation use Dita. Conrefs are ways to take a piece of content from here and include it in another place, right? It's kind of like, you could say kind of like an entity reference, kind of, a little bit. Sometimes, like conrefs are more flexible than that, but it's more or less the idea that you can define a reusable piece here and then reuse it in different other pieces of content, right? Conditional text, That's the idea that you can say like, well, this document here is for Microsoft or for Windows users, and this one is for Mac users. But 90% of those documents is the same, so we're going to just take the 10% that's not the same and make that conditional so that we switch between the different users, user types. Metadata, they got lots of metadata in there, like all kinds of information about how old something is and whatever. And then the last thing, and this is where the name Darwin Information Type Architecture comes from, specialization. The idea is that you can take the basic language and you can reuse it and add a bit of fields and blah, blah, blah. And you can basically create you can create your own adapted pieces of content from the original language. So it's adaptive in that sense. And all of this in XML. Now, I hear you say, isn't XML like done with? Because like when I talk about Dita and XML, everybody starts talking about JSON's like, oh, XML, that's like old school, that's so 90s of you. Like, what are you talking about? And like in our world, I think in Drupal, we still use some XML, like, but you see that going down. But the thing is that just like the dinosaurs, we thought that they were extinct, but they're still among us. They're the birds now. Just the same way XML has adapted and specialized in very specific niches. And they're not like the big monsters that are ruling the world anymore, I think. Well, probably they still do, but bear with me. But they've specialized in very specific fields. Like you've got this one for technical writers. I know that there's for financial transactions. There's a whole zoo of XML languages for very specific things. So XML is very much alive, but it's not that human friendly. XML is a great language for machines to talk with each other, but if you go and ask people to write XML, well, probably in this room, that kind of still works. But if you go to your customers, they're like, oh, what are you talking about? So let's take a little step back and look at what Dita does for technical writers. Basically, Dita allows you to type your information. What does that mean? It's the thing that I was talking about earlier, this topic orientedness, that you can create a piece of content that is specifically for a specific purpose. You can do topic-based authoring, so you can do this chunks of content, structured writing, like this split out in fields, conditional text, like what I said earlier, single sourcing, so you can have one single place where you have all your content, and then you reuse it in all the channels that you're using. Like for example, REM, you know, BlackBerry. REM. Did I say REM? What is it now? No, actually, they're called BlackBerry now. They changed their name. RIM. Sorry. Research in Motion. Everybody knows that. Yeah. So now they're called BlackBerry, and their main product is BlackBerry. So. I was talking with the guys that do the documentation for BlackBerries. And it's really interesting because they've got one single source of content that gets translated. And then they had how much, like 8 or 10 or even more transformations to like use the same content for the little booklet that goes with the phone, for the website, for the documentation that's on the phone, like all these different channels, like the sales documentation, training documents, they're all, like all these things, they're all built from the same base content. And then there's one last magic ingredient, and it's called minimalism. What is minimalism? Minimalism is the idea that you, how to say it? Like, if you look at the Drupal documentation, it's often very wrong against minimalism, because people start like your typical document. Well, you know, I'm very busy with documentation, as you can hear. But your typical documentation project is normally like a series of screenshots. Like, I'm going to show you how to do this. And then they start writing some piece of text, some screenshots, some piece of text. And then the thing that most people do is that while they're describing that process, like how to do something, they also describe tangential information. Like, okay, so first click here, do that, do that, do that. Oh, and this field, that because of this and this and this reason, it actually, you should be very careful what you put in here, blah, 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 blah. And the thing with that is that you've merged two pieces of information into one blob, right? And you see that everywhere. People very often forget to separate information. So they're so busy with explaining something that they try to heap as much information in it as possible. And then it becomes this long thing that does contain all the information you need. But if you need to do something, you're not going to read that whole thing. Like, what happens is that people just start reading, like, oh, boring. And then just skip a few steps, and then they forgot a really important step, and the thing is broken, and you get a support request. Right? So that's what most of the time happens. Now, the same thing also applies to other types of content. That's not just for technical writing. In technical writing, it's more so, but that's only because technical writing, people have less attention. Now, with mobile, suddenly everybody has less attention for everything. There's nobody who reads a full article anymore. People do. You know the F reading? Have you heard of that? I'm sure you all do it. It's like when you start reading a blog post, you read the first two lines of the first paragraph, you jump to the next paragraph, you read one line, you jump to the next paragraph, you read half of the line, jump to the next half, next. You don't read the blog post, like you don't read everything anymore. You just skim information. You've got a question? No, okay. So you just skim through information. And that's happening everywhere. So it's very important that whatever you do, you get, like we need to become better at writing content that answers questions faster. And to do that, minimalism is the key thing. Are there any questions at this point? No? Okay. Now, all of this is possible in Drupal. You don't need XML for this. I can prove you. and Drupal is way more badass, of course. So, Drupalzilla. Drupal's responsive and adaptive. I'll explain you. So, first point, information typing. Remember what the technical writers did? We're doing that already. We're like, I think, everybody here for sure is using content types, right? And entities with fields. And so what you're doing then is actually looking at your data and saying, well, we've got this type of information and this type of information and this type of information. And for this type of information, I need this and this and this and this field. So we're doing that naturally already. Most people don't do it consciously, but if you think about it, you've been doing this for ever since CCK came out, right? Topic-based authoring. Topic-based authoring, that's basically notes. We're doing that. When you tell your customers, well, just, you know, create notes, don't create this huge overview pages, you're already doing that, because what's happening is that you've defined these different types of information, and you tell your customer or your user to fill in the form and kind of stick to the structure, the information architecture of your site. Structured writing, we're doing that. We're using fields. And fields enforce structure. Like DITA is like, XML is more flexible because you can use the DTD to define like changing pieces of information that you can nest into other pieces, and it's a bit more flexible. So you can't do everything that XML can do with a fields-based system, but you can get pretty close actually. And for for normal humans, fields are way easier to deal with than a nested XML. Like there's interfaces that make that kind of XML authoring possible, but even those interfaces, even if they're very good, they're still pretty complicated. Conditional text, check, we've got that. It's a contrib module that one of my colleagues wrote. I don't know if it's really much in use, we'd have to have a look. It's been a while since there were commits to it, but there's conditional text, and we're at some point we're actually working with the Drupal documentation team to build a system for Drupal documentation used conditional text. Yeah? Yeah. 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 So conditional text, the idea is that that you can put conditional information inside a field. So you can have, for example, the Windows Mac example. You could have a field for how to operate something, or like what menu point. How to navigate to something, So then how to navigate to something would have a lot of stuff that's in common, but then there would be some piece of the text that's only for Mac and some piece that's only for views, for Windows. The same thing you can do for Drupal. Like if you have Drupal 5, 6, and 7, a module that's for 5, 6, and 7 that has been upgraded, probably a lot of the functionality is still the same, but there's going to be some pieces that are different. And then you can put those pieces in conditional text. That's the idea. Conditional fields, it's often more like you've got a field that's triggered by another field to be available or something like that. Okay? Yeah. So I hope I've convinced you that we can do that now with Drupal, but this is more than code. This is more than configuration. And here comes the tricky part, because you have to educate your users and you have to convince them to do the right thing. It's kind of like convincing people to take their medicine. If they don't do it, they get sick and you get a messy system. If they do it, it's not that much fun sometimes, but they can get a much more powerful system. So what do I mean with that? First of all, is to teach your users how to use minimalism, right? Because that's a really hard one. I catch myself very often, like also now in walkthrough it, for example. I've got myself writing explanations of some tangential information inside of step, and that's like, wow, and there's no place there even, so that's really insane. So that's really something that you have to teach people to think about and to make people aware of. You have to convince people to use a single source, to not use listing blobs. Let me explain. This is really typical. This happens all the time. You deliver a system and they've got you've put in a page content type or something, you know, the catch-all thing. And then the customer, because there was no calendar feature in your site, the customer starts adding a listing of events in HTML, right? And then you've got this blob that's just a blob, right? So if the date passes, that event is still there. If you want to reuse that event, you have to go and copy it. And now you've got two places where you have to keep track of it, and it's getting messier. And then you add it in a blog, and that's the third place. And you know, this is what you often see people doing when they want to extend the reach of their system. So and basically making people aware of this, that's like, okay, if you find yourself creating lists, then probably you should have a look if this is not something that you can abstract and use for and reuse in other places also. Maybe you should extend the platform to be able to do that. Meaningful metadata. What I mean with that is For example, often customers will say like, I'm the smartest. I know what should be on top on the list. And I want to curate that by hand. Draggable views and stuff like that. That's that. Some cases that's true. But probably, especially in a system where there's a lot of people working on the same system, probably should be thinking about, can we automate this? Can we put an algorithm in that based on the importance and the time when something was published and how many times people were visiting it, that it will put it more up or more down, depending on that. So that you're no longer like, leave it to the machines. They're smarter than us. Well, no, they're more persistent than us. I think that's the thing. Machines are more persistent than us because people forget. And maybe that person who was really smart and knew perfectly how to manage the site leaves for another job. And then you've got a system that's completely messed up and nobody knows how to maintain it. So so it's important to look at that, at metadata as a way to organize your content rather than just curating by hand. Like if people ask for like, I want a view where I can put the important stuff up, you should be thinking, is there a way to automate this? Can I use, for example, Radioactivity? Everybody knows Radioactivity module? Who doesn't? Okay. Go and check it out. It's really cool. Basically, what it does, it has it uses an algorithm from a radioactive decay to determine the energy of a post. So you can give a post a begin energy, like this is the most important thing ever. But then if nobody clicks it, then it decays. And then and like every interaction that you have with the element, it gets more energy. And then, but it keeps decaying also. So that way you can automatically organize content. So those are a few things. And now, the WYSIWYG rant. I'm not as much opposed against WYSIWYG as Karen McGrain or Jeff Eaton. We normally we put WYSIWYG in our content types. But the thing that you should really like when a customer asks for a WYSIWYG editor, you should be asking them, so why do you want that? Like, is that really going to help you? And if it's like a pure marketing site and like their stakeholders, like they really, really, really want it, then you can't do much. But WYSIWYG will kill your structure. WYSIWYG will kill your content because it puts all kinds of crap in it. And you like, especially if you allow these fancy styling stuff, it can, you know, you can make a Christmas tree out of your website. And the worst part of that is like, and that's okay for your website, but when you then want to reuse that content in other places, like when you want to create an API to use your content on Google Glass, you got this blob of text with all kinds of crap in it, and there's no way to like, well, there's some ways to get it out, but it's a lot of extra work. So if you see this requirement, we want a WYSIWYG, you should go and talk with your user or your customer, because maybe they just don't know. Or maybe they're not aware that this is going to make their life harder. Solution? I think a very limited WYSIWYG. Like I see, for me, I feel that WYSIWYG is kind of like a bandsaw. You understand that word, a bandsaw? I don't know, what is it in Hungarian? It's this machine, like, and it's got this saw that's turning really fast, and it's like really dangerous. What? Is that a kurfürisch? Like, yeah. Yeah, it's a bandsaw. So WYSIWYG is kind of like a bandsaw. You can, if you know how to handle it, and if you put the right protection around it, it's a very powerful thing that allows your clients to add structure in their content. But if it doesn't have any protection around it, you're going to get accidents and really big ones. So that's kind of my feeling about it. So I think the idea is try to always, like, don't just enable all the features of your WYSIWYG editor. Like, ask, like, which one do you really need? And I think that way you can humor your customer and still keep the system sane. So, in short, I hope that I've shown you that Drupalzilla is able to handle all of your content if you don't mess with it. Don't put a pink scarf on Drupalzilla, because that will just kill its mojo. If you want to tweet that, I've got a QR code for you. what I want to end with is that you should really go and watch, and there'll be some a little bit of time for questions. You should really go and watch these sessions. Building for a Post-Mobile World by Jeff Eaton. That was who has seen it already? Yeah. Anybody else? You should go watch it. It's really fun, and it's very interesting. It's similar information. He also has lots of references to books and stuff. And this one from Karen McGrane. Who has seen this one? It was a keynote at Portland. It's she really threw a dog in the Spark balls game. I don't know if you know. Karen McGrane basically was criticizing the Spark initiative for bringing in-place editing and WYSIWYG editors into Drupal core. As I said, like for me, these are bandsaws. If you put the right protection around them, I think they're still good, and they actually help your users, but they can be very destructive also. So it's going to depend on us to build the systems, because for example, both Karen McGrane and Jeff Eaton were referring to NPR. Probably nobody here knows that, but it's a public a radio station in the US, and they generate a lot of media, a lot of news in a lot of different formats, and then their feeds are used by everybody, and in very different ways. And they were using it as like the poster child, like, look at this, they're doing this and it's awesome. And then there was a guy from NPR who said like, yeah, but the editors hate it. So I think it's a bit of a balancing game, and I don't think we should be too radical about either side. And on that note, I would like to finish the talk. Are there any questions? Yeah?
So you have been talking about this documentation format for a long time, but yeah. I don't know if you have any good examples, like a poster type for Dita.
For Dita? Well, in Drupal community, no.
But anywhere else, just to see.
Like some examples of Dita? Well, for example, legal firms are using it. To compile their legal documents, so you can like have conditional text and like bring pieces together. Like the example I said about BlackBerry, like mining companies, companies that create the tools for mining, right? So they've got because they're not that much standardized. Well, they're somewhat standardized, but they have a lot of custom equipment or semi-custom equipment in smaller batches. So what the problem they have is that they might have a drilling machine and then a slightly different version and a slightly different version and a slightly different version. So you got, I don't know how many different versions of the same kind of machine, and they're all using slightly different pieces of materials inside. So if you then need to create documentation for this, and in mining this is very important, because people, like, you know, if a machine breaks down and it can't work, like one of these huge machines, it can cost millions, even if it's only for a day. So there it's really important to have good documentation. So what do? They use Dita to create documentation for each of the small pieces, and then they compile the bigger documentation based on that. So those are a few examples. Also in the semiconductor industry, Dita is quite big there, because they use it also to document how certain chips work, and then like if you put them together, like that kind of stuff, so that you can create the documentation of the above laying more complex system based on the components from the systems that lay underneath. And like I've been talking about this for a very long time. Like it's like 4 years now that I do similar talks about like we need to look at data and we need to do stuff with that. We haven't been able to, there's a few people that are using Drupal in a data workflow. That's already happening. They just create XML and then export it into a Drupal site. They see Drupal as an output format. But I think we can go further. I think Drupal can be the core system that drives all your content. So we can take that top job. We can be Drupalzilla and eat everybody for breakfast. But to do that, we need to be aware of a few things and we need to approach it in a certain way. Okay. Other questions? Yeah, like for translations, that's I heard some really amazing numbers there where they said like that up to 60% of your translation costs you can reduce your translation costs by up to 60% in some cases, because instead of translating whole documents, you're translating chunks of information.
I would argue with that.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
But also for translators,
yeah.
Just to translate at one time, not to insert from the memory.
Yeah.
That's also some
burden,
but it's not a big step.
I think translation memory is one thing, but what Dita promises is that you can just say like, okay, I need a topic. I need the topic how to do XYZ, and I'm going to put that also in my brochure. And then if I don't change anything in this, and I can just take the whole topic and put it there, I don't need to change anything. I can reuse the translation that was done for the whole topic. I know like if you, translation memories are not a golden bullet, or silver bullet, golden bullet doesn't do much against werewolves. But so it's not a silver bullet, but like if you can reuse the whole topic, then you save a lot of time. In a lot of other places where they don't use this kind of structure, basically what happens is that the authors just create like a document, a perfectly handcrafted document, and then they create another document and another one and another one and another one, and every single one has to be sent to a translator to be translated, the whole thing of it. And then if you have a translation memory, kind of works some, but the real value is if you had a full topic that's just with its title and the whole content just copied over, then you don't need to do any translation on that. I think probably if those are Dita documents, probably you don't even see those. Probably they just send you the individual pieces of text that need to be translated, with then still a translation memory on top of that. I think. Well, I have never translated these things, so I don't know. Yeah. Oh, because I know that I heard some translation bureaus talk about how they do it, and sometimes they just get pieces of text, like not even a whole document. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
You mentioned the BusyWig.
Yeah.
Puts a lot of extra information. I would use BusyWig for putting images, links, and
yeah. Well, even images is a problem, because if they're not in a field, they're not accessible by your API. They're just part of your content blob, like this amorph piece of information that contains whatever. There's no structure, so you can't then say like, okay, give me the image for this piece of content. So then like the image insert, that kind of functionality, that solves that problem. So you start with adding it as a field, and then you add that field into your content. So that's how you can get around that. And that's just one example. But sometimes it's like really crazy. Some people will go and start coloring things differently and really mess up everything, or make things that are certain width, and then your whole site breaks. So, yeah. Sir?
If you enter big tables and
yeah, like tables are a perfect example. Yeah. Well, tables are hard. Yeah. Tables are very hard. Yeah. So for tables, I think you're better off if you can to abstract them and to build them again and to not have them as an HTML table, but to have them as a view or something, if you can. Sometimes it just doesn't make sense, but okay. Last question? Yeah. Then I would like to thank you very much for coming to my Drupalzilla session. Thank you.